I want to start by making an announcement about the NAP tour. Those of you who are going on the NAP tour, it starts at 2 p.m. They're going to meet in the lobby at 1 p.m. To take the Metro Mover, the free rail thing over there, since it's a little hot out, and apparently the walking is treacherous. Which lobby? The hotel lobby. The registration lobby. The upstairs lobby. I think those were intended to all be the same place. The one floor up. If you have any questions about the NAP tour, you should see Henry A. He's in the front row raising his hand right now. you can talk to him. Are there any open slots, Henry? Any more spaces if people want to go? Okay, so if you want to go on the NAP tour and you haven't signed up yet, come up now and let Henry know. So the agenda for this session is we're going to have some quick outbriefs from each of the clusters, what they talked about, sort of progress made plans that came out of the time that we made available for meetings this week. Then we're going to go to sort of a community outbrief and questions. This is a chance for you to give feedback to the GPO. How'd the meeting go? What would you like to see different? I've actually been making a little list of things that I thought would improve things and start that off. Max is going to go first. So let me just turn over to Max.
Yeah, I have to get out of order because I need to go to the airport, so thanks very much. So cluster E, that's the orbit cluster. The current status is, what we proposed is basically trying to show disconnected operations, meaning that we have resources during an experiment which get disconnected from the control framework and therefore need to run on their own. So the disconnected control, like you can issue your experiment description and it gets loaded and all nodes get configured, and then if the nodes lose connectivity, they can still continue their experiments. They still know what to do. That is done. The measurements collected on the resources are automatically cached when they are disconnected, and when the node gets back into connectivity with the control framework, it also then either automatically or under experiment control, depending on if the measurement channel is the same as the experiment channel, the experiments are being dumped to the measurement server. That is done. And that the measurement part, the orbit measurement library, is actually a completely separated piece of code. So if anybody is interested in collecting measurements, can be completely separated from the control framework. So if you're interested in doing something, that contact us, and we have been deploying OML in different contexts, and it's working quite well. What is pending is steerable experiments, meaning we want to have experiments which change their behavior based on the context information, based on measurements information. And the sort of canonical example for us in a mobile environment is that your experiment may change when it gets like within 100 meters of an intersection, or in a wireless environment, you want to change your routing protocol depending on how many neighbors you see around you. So that is still pending. What we basically need to do is connect the experiment, the resource controller with the measurement daemon. On the communication fabric, by communication fabric, I mean the the communication fabric between all the different components in the control framework and in the experimenter control framework as well. That's currently a set of REST-based services, and trying to move away from that one, especially if we go to federation, that sort of makes it, that is sort of a bit brittle. So ultimately, we're going to move to an RDF-based persistent pub subsystem. So think enterprise bus on steroids. We currently have a prototype based on XMPP as the communication fabric, and we have already done some experiments using that to actually support federation, and that actually works quite well. But we want to go a step further. The one other thing we have done, not sort of inside the Spiral 1 contract, but we within in another project, but which is very relevant here, the current orbit nodes are a little bit expensive for many folks. They're very powerful, but very often too powerful for what, especially for if you're interested in pure wireless experiments. So we have designed with Thanasis Karakalis from CERT in Greece, we've designed a low-cost node. And if you go to our website, you see the design, and it's like I think it costs about, I don't know what the dollar at the moment stands, but it's about 200 euros to build that node. And so I think that's in the budget of many research groups. So if you're interested in building a small, whatever small means for you, a wireless testbed, contact us, and it's a pretty easy way of doing it. We're also working on long, what we call sort of long-range L2 connectivity over I2. It's not so much a technical issue, it's more an administrative issue, trying to get the right two people to talk to each other, and that's sort of work in progress. But we're planning a demo for GEC5, where we're basically trying to connect nodes in the orbit testbed at Rutgers with nodes at what we call Norbit, the NICTA version of Norbit in Australia. And sort of the canonical experiment, you think, why would a wireless testbed need long-range connectivity? And here we're really using them to create virtual testbeds. So the canonical example, if think about it, you want to do an experiment involving wireless access points, where Wi-Fi access points with a WiMAX backhaul, and assume there's no testbed in the world which has such a resource. So what we want to do is to demonstrate creating basically a virtual access point where one side, the Wi-Fi side of that access point, in this case, would sit in Australia, and the WiMAX side would sit in Rutgers University. And basically, we're using the L2 long-range network here, the WAN, to connect the two parts into a single virtual device resource. And we hope to have all the administrative stuff worked out for GEC5. Then the main part from a substrate point of view was WiMAX, or is still WiMAX. If you've seen our demo, we have WiMAX running as of about 2 weeks ago. So we have now basic connectivity. The remaining work is basically making that resource more programmable. It's based on the NEC, on the NEC product, WiMAX base station. And you know, the product is used in a very different context from what we want to use it. We want to, you know, change parameters, all the parameters we can change them all the time for basically at a per experiment, per flow, per whatever. And that's not how product devices are used, and therefore it's also not how the entire infrastructure is designed for. So there is a bit of work for us to do on making that more convenient for experimenters to use and take advantage of. And so that's the wrap-up. So we moved the whole sort of software, the control framework software, and all the supporting software to a new domain, mytestbed.net. And the OMF part is sort of the developer side of the framework. OMF is sort of the Orbit Management Framework. And we're trying to turn this into a more generic portal for experimenters. And the site specific to Orbit at Rutgers, and where still a lot of the information, also a lot of the generic information is, it's www.orbitlab.org. If you don't find any information there, you should at least find an email to send a complaint to. All right, thanks very much.
Okay. So, continuing on in reverse alphabetical order, let's ask Ilya to come up. Sorry for the surprise, but you know, we might as well pick an order, and now everybody else will know. So everybody knows that these slides are going to be online with the other plenary slides on the wiki, so I'll be putting them up as soon as I get them.
Okay. Oh, no, wait, that's the last slide. So I will be talking about the Cluster D, that's Orca BenCon, SciDome, and Vice projects. So the brief status for all the Cluster D participants, starting with Orca. So Orca is part of the Orca BEN project, basically deploying Orca control framework on top of BEN, breakable experimental network optical substrate. So we've developed a universal driver framework for network elements, and we've implemented and demonstrated the 6509 driver, Cisco 6509, and we've developed almost complete Infinera DTN and Pilatus drivers. We've incorporated the VLAN allocation policy broker into Orca, and completed the development of NDL OWL schema. NDL is a network description language, so we now have a complete NDL OWL BEN substrate representation, and we're developing a Java toolkit to do inferences on it and some simple path computations. For Kansai, they've deployed an Orca instance, developed a clearinghouse framework based on Orca interfaces, as basically described by us to them, and then developed SOAP XML RPC interaction framework between clearinghouse and research portal. And they also did a demo at on Tuesday. Dome have completed virtualization. They're now able to define schedule launch experiments, so far without full Orca integration. However, that's the next step. And then they will be looking into the integration in the coming months. And then Vice continued developing a virtual sensor to enable sensor multiplexing, developed Orca handlers to integrate virtual sensor into Orca, and then their plan is they started with an older Orca code base, so they will be moving on to the latest version that RENSI maintains. So as far as the meetings, we had very very productive, very long meetings over the 2 days. We started with a long discussion on Orca architecture and how to properly integrate some substrates and testbeds with Orca. We then followed with a discussion of near-term Orca features that we at RENSI and Duke plan to integrate into it, and those really are centered around changing the resource representation that Orca uses to something that's ontology NDL OWL based, and this is on our plate basically for the next 2 months. And also we need to switch to multipass reservation and provisioning. This is an architectural limitation we've encountered with Orca that we're planning to address shortly. Then followed with a discussion of code structure. Orca is about 25,000 lines of Java code, so it's not an easy beast to sort of get into and understand right away. And interestingly enough, it seemed like everybody agreed that something we're loosely calling OrcaFest sometime in May would be a good idea, where Cluster D developers, essentially core developers, would come down to RENCI, and we'll have kind of a two-day coding fest, see if we can hammer out the differences and implement sort of the near-term necessary features to help them integrate. So that's the status.
Thanks very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll report really quickly on the outcomes of the cluster meetings that we've had in Cluster C in the last couple days. The main points that we discussed, I'll go through all of these, some in a little bit more detail than others, are the progress of status and the projects in our cluster. We had a discussion, spurred by Chip's comments the other day about the role of the clearinghouse. I'll talk a little about that. We also talked about our security architectures. We spent quite a while talking about what our RSpec ought to look like. And we heard from some potential new cluster members. So the sort of the biggest news item in our progress and status is that we have a full control plane federation going. This includes four sites that are in our cluster: at Utah, the Protogenie project, and the MULab testbed, and then the instrumentation tools project from Kentucky and the measurement system project from Wisconsin and CMU. So what this basically means is that the resources that are controlled by Emulab based software at each one of these sites, one can create a slice that spans all of them, and each of these facilities is willing to accept each other's users and accept each other's slices. And you can create slices with topologies using VLANs within a single site, and you can create topologies that use tunnels to get between the sites. And replacing some of those tunnels with dedicated connectivity is one of the things that we're going to be working on next. Other projects, progress from projects, the Carnegie Mellon testbeds project demonstrated some connectivity between their wired and wireless experimentation environments. The programmable edge node project from UMass Lowell has added support for the component that they're developing to the Emulab software, which means that it's available through Protogenie interfaces and will presumably at some point be part of that federation. The D-Tunnels project from Georgia Tech has got a topology creation service. And right now they use a custom RSpec, and one of the things we talked about is starting to use the RSpec that the Protogenie project itself has developed to drive that tunnel, that topology creation service. So as for the current role of the clearinghouse in our federation, so Chip had listed three roles that a clearinghouse could have. So the first role, bringing together sort of resource providers and users or researchers, this is a role that our clearinghouse does currently have. In that it acts as a central point for establishing trust between users and federated components, and it also provides registries of these things so that they can find each other. The second thing was logging and auditing, kind of a global view of what is going on, has going on in the system. And at this point, our clearinghouse does not play this role. And we talked about a couple possible strategies. So one of which is to do logging and auditing centrally, where the clearinghouse would play this role. Another potential strategy we talked about was having each slice authority keep track of the components that are in slices that it owns. So we didn't come to a decision on this, but we've got a couple ideas that we're going to explore. And the third one was sort of global policy enforcement. So NSF says grad students cannot have more than 10 components or one, or something like this. So this is also not a role that our clearinghouse has today. And we talked about three potential ways to do this, one of which is to centralize it in the clearinghouse, another of which was to, again, have slice authorities, since if we use the slice authority as the mechanism for point number two there, then the slice authorities might be in a position to do point number three. Another interesting idea that we talked about was the possibility of having sort of external enforcers, where when anybody makes a request of a component, that component manager can turn around and ask some kind of external enforcer, does this violate some global policy? And because that external enforcer gets asked about all requests like that, they'd have a global viewer that could answer this. And this might be kind of an interesting idea because it might allow different component managers to opt in to different global policies. Sort of other topics we talked about security architecture. I won't go over that again now because I gave a summary of it in the control framework working group yesterday. We talked for quite a while about RSpec that I won't be able to summarize in 2 minutes, but a large motivating, I think one of the things we talked about was a good motivating question for figuring out what goes in it and is just sort of the simple question, who needs to know what when? For example, what does a researcher need to know exactly to create it, to decide what resources they want? And then we heard from a couple projects that have expressed some interest in joining our cluster, an international federation from ETR in Korea, and a large-scale real-time simulation project from here in Florida, and a statewide 10-gig network from Louisiana. So I'll keep it short, and that's what I had.
Thank you, Rob. So Larry Peterson had to leave early, and so he's not here to give Cluster B status. So. John Turner is on very little notice, agreed to give an update on what happened. So, thank you, John.
Okay, so on Tuesday, we spent a fair amount of the session just really on status reports, just having everybody indicate where they are in their projects and what's been accomplished since the last GEC, and in particular focusing on some of the collaborative activities that are taking place. I won't try to enumerate those, but at this point I think that a fair summary is that most of us are sufficiently preoccupied with our individual projects that we're really just getting beginning on some of the more collaborative components. There are certainly some projects that are ahead of others in that respect, but we still have a ways to go to integrate things more fully. Excuse me. We had a long discussion about RSpecs, and in particular the role of XML RPC versus SOAP in communicating RSpecs and how various things are specified. This went on into some additional discussion on Wednesday. There are a couple of the projects in our cluster that are interested in using SOAP and think that it's a better solution than what is currently being pursued. This also came up in the control framework working group, and I think the sort of main outcome from our discussion was just really an understanding that the SOAP option versus the current option that is planned is a matter of where the complexity dealing with resource reservations gets hidden. Does it get wrapped up in a big complicated data structure, or does it get hidden in the interface? We haven't come to any conclusion on that, so at the moment we're just continuing those discussions and for the time being carrying on with the RSpec and XML RPC approach, but that's something that will undoubtedly continue to be discussed. We also spent some time talking about a couple of other issues. One is how we're going to address the issue of end-to-end layer two connections. Again, we haven't come to any conclusions on this. Frankly, we were largely discussing what is that really going to mean in the context of our projects. And some of the questions include, does end-to-end layer 2 going to mean end-to-end VLANs, including multi-point VLANs, or is it just point-to-point? Can these L2 be actually carried inside tunnels, and so forth? So there's a wide range of views about, how we might go about advancing that item. We also had some discussion about how we're going to handle policies for controlling access to resources. The issue is, in any system where you allow people to reserve resources, you have to worry about the case where someone tries to acquire all the resources and doesn't let them go. And so, we need mechanisms and policies to manage that appropriately. Again, I can't say that we reached any conclusions about that, but we at least discussed some of the issues. So that's my quick summary. Yep.
Okay, I don't think there's anybody here from Cluster A. Is that right? I think John Roklosky left. Okay, so that wraps up the cluster outbriefs. So the next section is Chips. Is he in the room? There he is.
I think it really is, I remember right, people asking questions.
Okay, I thought you had some socks.